is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Bomb, 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 Iran. They're going to have a deal by tomorrow. Or not. Well, that's the word. John McCain's words are echoing out there. And, of course, Netanyahu's right behind him. And some of the Republican right are right in there. They want to escalate things because peace with people who are moderate as opposed to people who are something else, like Saudi Arabia, who's attacking Yemen. And who are they attacking? They're attacking the Houthis, who are moderate Islamists. They are Shia. And the Shia is taking over the southern part of Iraq, and the same thing is happening with respect to Yemen, which has come up last week. This ball game keeps getting played, and the fear among the arch-conservatives is like the fear of the economy. In terms of the fear of the economy, there's going to get to be successful. A successful Iranian negotiation would do so much for Obama and our legacy as a people, but so much harm to the predictors of doom called the conservatives, the so-called conservatives, radical, nonsensical people who want our economy to fail just to say, I told you so. And this is pretty much what the story is from Paul Krugman today. The Affordable Care Act is fully implemented. When it is, you're going to see more and more jobs. As a whole, they've added 3.3 million, the biggest gain since the 90s. And, of course, what do the deep-level modern conservatives' ideology reflect? Depends on the proposition only that they alone possess the secret key to prosperity. As a result, you often have politicians on the right making claims like this one from former Senator Rand Paul. When in the last in our country we created millions of jobs? Well, it was under Ronald Reagan, don't you know? Actually, if creating millions of jobs means adding 2 million or more jobs in a given year, we've done it 13 times. Since Reagan left office, 8 times under Clinton, twice under George G. Wiz, and 3 times under a Barack Obama. But who's counting? So, Floyd, you know, this whole situation starts to go down to what are they going to do about Jeb Bush? He's attacking a former buddy, a former organizer of the Gore v. Bush campaign to turn the election around. That was James Baker. And they're running up against each other right now. Are we ready for 45, meaning Jeb? Who's going to be the 45th president, don't you know? And then after all of that is said and done, you have the talk coming up about who should be on the $20 bill. No longer do Andrew Jackson deserve that role. He was a great Indian killer who went into villages and killed the children and the old people when the Braves left. That's his history that came out some years ago, and it's finally catching up with the $20 bill. Should it be Harriet Tubman, who's got a great history in the Underground Railroad and all of that? And then, of course, someone I happen to think another Harriet might be Harriet Beecher Stowe. So these are some of the things that I've come across over this early part of the week here. So
they're going to change the $20 bill from Andrew Jackson to somebody else, huh?
Yeah. So who would you vote for? What woman do you think? Well, how about Hillary? There's another H.
I don't know. I'm not really.
Do you have a vote out there? 941-745-1490. If you have any thoughts on who should be on the $20 bill and why, keeping the currency current, this is the thing. It's just, you can take a look at that, Floyd. It's an interesting cartoon they did in the New York Times.
And there it is, a portrait of Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill.
I wonder how many people know about
Scratch
her.
Off to win $1 billion.
Yeah. Harriet Tubman was part of the Underground Railroad, and she helped make that happen, which is a kind of a misnomer. Lots of places became localities for people who found their way in the middle of the night to get out of the Deep South and escape the fugitive slave law. What was, you recall what that was about, Floyd?
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting. When I grew up in Ohio, I lived in an old colonial house built in the 1800s. Big old home. And we lived next to a creek, and there was a tunnel leading from the creek that ran through parts of Main Street that was designed as part of the Underground Railroad right there on our property. and it was designed to help smuggle slaves from the Deep South into their freedom. So,
what town were you in?
This was a small town in Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio.
Near Youngstown?
Yeah, Youngstown, Ohio,
of course,
yes.
You were, how far is that from Cincinnati?
Oh, that's Cincinnati, the part of the state.
Oh, the other part.
Yeah.
Okay.
Youngstown is near Pittsburgh.
Oh, so is it along the river or?
Yeah, it was near the river. There was the Mahoney River. And so anyway, the Harriet Tubman is part of that our heritage. And there was a lot of white and a lot of black people who worked. And in Ohio, it was largely white people helping to free the blacks in that particular area. Again, people often regard the white man as the person who had the Africans as slaves, but there are a lot of white people who died during the Civil War, who died during the marches in Selma, not at that time, but at different times, going down to help register blacks to vote and then disappeared. We worked together, blacks and whites. So it'd be interesting to see.
Well, you know, Cincinnati in Ohio was where she had her home. I visited Cincinnati, not far from Xavier University, which is a Catholic school with a lot of black players on the basketball team that were in the NCAA just recently. They lost, I forget to who, but that is the history of Cincinnati. She came from Connecticut, Harriet Beecher Stowe, and wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. What she wrote about was, of course, if you haven't read the book, was Levi who refused to beat a woman to death at the order of his master, so he was beaten to death instead, and a big man, and he just took the beating as his punishment, which was death. And then from there it showed how they had been escaping out of the various plantations to go north, and women with their children, rather than see the separation, children taken from mothers and sold as livestock, which is what was going on. These people were not treated, just ordered around to do work. They were families separated. In fact, the song My Old Kentucky Home was written by slaves, not by white people, readapted for white people and for the Kentucky Derby. But it was a separation of people at that time out of Kentucky. Kentucky had the crop there that was picked by slaves was tobacco, a very easy crop in a very moderate temperature compared to the deep south of Louisiana. And when people were sent from Kentucky, they were often sent to Louisiana to work in the cotton fields, which were a death sentence. So you're lucky if you lasted 2 years. Most people died from the heat and the difficulty of picking the cotton by hand. Anyone who's ever seen what cotton can do to you, if you know what a bougainvillea bush is like, well, that's somewhat like a cotton plant.
That was the oil industry of the 1800s and 1700s. Mm-hmm. It was a way of making money, and there were certain people in the United States interested in whatever they could do for that money and that power, even if it meant using human slaves to do so.
Well, I think it was more of the cotton industry that was, but I didn't know that the oil industry was part of that, too.
No, I'm saying, the thing is, today...
I mean, that was the oil of that time.
No, and basically, I'm making an analogy.
Oh, okay.
That we have people in our society that are looking at whatever they can do to make money. And in the South, cotton and tobacco were two big crops. And it made no difference whether or not they were harvested in a humane manner or not. It's just there was money there. There was money. And if you could do it legally by having a slave and treating the slave brutally, it was done. The reason I made the analogy to oil, and I'll hold that off a moment because I hate to leave this topic. This is an interesting topic.
Go ahead.
I'll get back to the oil part and the analogy in a second. The slavery issue that happened here in America, it began in Africa. The Africans had slaves. It began in the Middle East. The people in the Middle East had slaves. Today, Boko Haram, the ISIS, really, they've vowed loyalty to the ISIS. They're in North Africa and Nigeria. They're taking slaves. They're capturing black women from schools, young black women. They're selling them as slaves. They're using them as wives. They're breaking up families. And unfortunately, there's
the blacks,
a culture.
So you're saying the blacks have always done this to themselves?
Well, I'm not saying that. There are some whites that have been terrible to other whites and to blacks. But unfortunately, we still see slavery in so many different ways still existing. And right now, we see a group of this ISIS-related group, Boko Haram, Islamist, who are still, they still believe in the essence of slavery. They still believe, and that's exactly what they've claimed they've done. They've captured 200 girls from Nigerian schools. They've raided and killed and captured even more hostages since then. And it's still going on. This whole idea of one tribe or one group of individuals raiding another group of individuals and taken as hostages. And they've taken schoolboys too, but for warriors, but largely women, and killing other different people. And it's barbaric, but it's just amazing how that still happens today.
It is amazing, but it's a different kind of slavery, first of all. But if you have a question on this or a thought, 941-745, I'd like your
1490.
There you go.
941-745-1490.
But my thoughts go to the fact that at the time of the Civil War, up to that point, the sale of bodies of treated as cattle was $4 to $5 billion annually. So we're going to, looks like we may have a caller.
Yeah, we have a caller. I'm going to be brave and put the caller directly online.
Good morning.
Welcome to 1490. This is the Morning Edge. What's your name, please?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And I wanted to just say that the Americans were worse with slavery than anybody. The blacks in Africa did have slaves, but they kept families together. When they came here, we split up families, which makes a terrific difference.
Well, they sometimes kept families together. The whole thing about the Bible shows how you can sell even your daughter into slavery. Boko Haram is not keeping families together. They're stealing children from schools. So I'm not sure I believe that they kept families. By the way, what's your first name?
Pat.
Pat, thank you very much for calling.
I wanted to also add that I think Eleanor Roosevelt should be on the $20 bill.
Well, that would make a lot of sense.
Thank you.
She's very good, Pat. That's a good idea.
That's an interesting idea, yeah. Well, it was a president, and he was honored. He's his...
Pat, did we lose you?
I think she cut off, yeah.
Well,
there you have a vote for somebody on the $20, other than a woman. The move to have women on. And Pat makes some interesting points. I think you're both right, actually, except that in the case that's going on right now, the taking and there isn't so much selling of slaves. The money isn't being made off of the selling of flesh. The auction blocks aren't out there in the open as they were in the United States. And you go to St. Augustine, Florida, you can still see the auction block. It's still around. You see this auction blocks in Louisiana as well, and in the Carolinas, where the slaves were stood up there naked to the world, chosen by their physical traits, a man by himself, a woman by herself, a woman with children, a woman with a child suckling the breast, all of that behavior treated as cattle. After all, they were only in the Constitution. People like to honor the Constitution. Said they were 3/5 of a person because they were property, as women were up until 1920.
Well, that wasn't the Constitution. That was a law that was passed, a 3/5 decision.
But it's in the Constitution as well, Floyd, if you read it. But that's all right. We can dispute it. The point is, it's in the law in any event.
It was part of the law that as far as voting representation, that a black person was 3/5 of a vote for representation as a white person. Absolutely. Yeah, and it's just amazing to see that after all these years, all this modern technology, all the advances that humankind has made, that there's a part of the world that's still willing to degenerate back into this same type of servitude.
Well, there's money to be made, don't you know?
Money, but also power. And again, that's money represents power. In parts of Africa, it used to be cattle represented power. And in parts of the Middle East, it was camels that you had, or goats, or antelope, or whatever, the reindeer that you had. And women. Women and your antelope or cattle or goats... and money in America, which whatever it came from, it came from slaves or it came from oil, wherever it comes from, that represents power. And that's what man seems to want, is the ability to have power.
Well, the thing that's happening now in the Middle East is that we're going to see a war between the moderate Shia Muslims who are coming out of Iran and who've been in Iraq all along. Two-thirds of Iraq has been a moderate Shia. And the fundamentalist, madrasa-educated, Saudi-based ISIS and Sunnis who are running this war of slavery and all of that. That's not happening on the other side. The Shia are not doing that. And this is where the real differences show themselves. And we are unfortunately afraid to say, when Saudi Arabia starts, because Yemen is on the border of Saudi and their border is threatened, and Mecca.
Yeah, picture this geographically. You have the Saudi Peninsula, and the very bottom of it, this is little desolate area called Yemen. And it's not been very stable for many years. Mm-hmm. And the government that it did have was just overthrown by the Houthis. Can you pronounce it?
Houthis. And they are actually, they're part of Yemen. They were driven out and they came back again. And the leader that was the leader of Yemen at that point, who was a Sunni, ran away and their parliament is dissolved. So the Houthis basically have taken over.
Well, he was chased out. He didn't run. He was
driven out, chased out, whatever.
And what we have now is we also have Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is based in Yemen, and it's
one of the bases.
Yeah, and it's a big
but it's
mess
not, it's,
right here.
That's that, to be understood here, so we don't get confused. Al Qaeda is part of the Sunni madrasa education, and Al Qaeda and ISIS are really kindred spirits, as is Boko Haram. Those are all Sunni religious-based, radical madrasa-educated. Theology, doctrine, whatever, that is unlike Shia, that is not the same as. And so when people confuse Islam, they do it in that way. They think it's all Islam, therefore it's all the same. It's like Liberty College, where Ted Cruz was just speaking recently. And that was Jerry Falwell.
Jerry Falwell.
And that's our version of ISIS, believe it or not. If they go extreme, you start looking at the extremists within the elements of the evangelistic thing. It's all about Mosaic law, death to everyone. You do it or else.
And death to the infidels, the people who don't believe exactly the way you
exactly,
believe.
Exactly, exactly. That's the similarity. And when you take those into an extreme barbaric circumstance that is chaos, those people will be the most vengeful, most mean-spirited. They'll use any device necessary to, as you said before, Floyd, to maintain power and push that whole point.
Yeah, it's amazing. Here they are, all descendants of Muhammad, and as much as they don't like the West, they hate each other even more. You had the analogy of the Catholics and the Protestants in Ireland.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
And here they are, all descendants of the theology of Christ, all Christians, and they're killing and bombing and shooting each other like crazy.
Bombing in London as well.
And yeah, and in Belfast, and it was just amazing that you find these religious groups, whether they're Christian or they're Muslim, their worst enemies are themselves.
Well, I like to point out something that people don't know. When you, Catholics go to their, I was raised Catholic, so I have a real, and I worked with a lot of churches in my time in the past. And when they go to their service every time, they have an article of faith. What's that called? Anyway.
He was raised Catholic.
Well, I'm trying to forget that. But the Nicene Creed is what's uttered in the Catholic Church at every single Mass.
There we go. That little segue got you in there. Okay.
Thank you very much for that. But the Nicene Creed is the Apostles' Creed by any other name. And if you look at that creed, it's all designed to say there is there's a God, the Father, the
Son,
Son,
and Holy Ghost. It's the same thing in the Protestant churches
right.
as well.
But that was the test of heresy. When the Treaty of Nicaea came out, it was in 350 A.D. after the death of Christ, they had a big fight. There were those who said that Christ was a prophet, and his teaching was divine. But and you had to believe only in his teaching, the golden rule, basically. It was too simple. Everybody was a minister on an equal basis. And so you had the other side saying, well, we want to keep the power of Rome. We are now the Holy Roman Empire. When Constantine came in, he changed the law of Rome to be the Holy Roman Empire. Now, we don't want to lose that, folks. We had our Sabbath on, which was the Jewish Christian Sabbath. We changed that to a Sunday from a Saturday. Constantine did that. Now you got a situation where we're different. But if we don't keep that power of Rome, we lose it. So we're going to punish those people who say that he's just like any other prophet. He's God, because the Romans had a God that lived forever. We've got the real God that lived forever. And that was the argument, really. And so that to this day, that's practiced unconsciously. People nice. Well, we're nice to one another, aren't we? And that's the attitude. Well, if you're part of the country club, they are. They don't shun you or anything else. But if you're not, they do. They shun you. So this is the ball game. And were you raised Catholic as well?
Well, I was raised Methodist.
No.
My parents were my mother was Baptist. I've got two Baptist preachers. One was the actual was a president of a Baptist college.
Wow.
My father was raised Catholic. I was confirmed Lutheran. I've been to all of those churches. I've read the Bible, most of it anyway. And the more I studied, the more I questioned, the more we said, this doesn't make sense. And
the more you question than everything.
The more I question what I saw right, in the Bible. Right. The fact that I could sell, even right. though my daughter ticked me off sometimes, the fact that I could sell my daughter into slavery, mm-hmm. the fact I can be...
That's Old Testament. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And that is what... That's the real test of, I think, the difference between a Christian of the New Testament and the Old Testament. The New Testament is love one another. Keep it simple, folks. Mm-hmm. No vengeance. Forgiveness is what it's about, folks. Or you're not Christian. If you don't forgive, you're not Christian.
And yet the people, before the Civil War, they used the Old Testament as justification of having slaves.
Exactly. And well, the people of mud, don't you know? They call them the people of mud in the Bible.
Yeah, and it's...
the dark-skinned
so
people.
So the more I read, and I said, some of this stuff isn't making sense to me, and I studied the history of the Bible and looked at the books that were left out. It's interesting, any woman who might have written a book like the Book of Mary was discarded from the Bible. But the slavery issue, taking of slaves and killing and taking of foreskins, which is an interesting topic.
Is how the Nazis knew whether you were a Jew or not.
Yeah.
In Germany, they would check out your foreskin.
And it was... The more I read, the more I said, some of this stuff just doesn't make sense, that a loving God could do this to his own people or could justify such a thing. But I've been very much involved in churches. And again, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. I had two uncles. As far as prophet, yeah, Jesus is a prophet for the early Christians and then became a god. Today, even the people of Islam believe that Jesus was a prophet as part of their heritage as well.
Well, Muhammad declared that, and what they've done in Islam is to say that, and it's written, in, not that I'm anything, I know nothing about Islam, I'm going to, generally speaking, but there are particulars that come out rather obviously, and they are come to the point that you can't depict Muhammad. So he's part of your imagination, and he becomes aligned with the same as Allah. And you have that kind of nonsense, and so now they go around, and anything that criticizes the fundamentalists say that anything you criticize in terms of religion, you criticize Allah and you criticize Muhammad all in the same breath. Now, what's happened in Indiana, Governor Mike Pence has signed into law that you can't tell people who own a business and of a religion can deny service to people if they're gay or if they're a mixed race or a whole variety of things that are listed, I understand, in the Indiana law. So the Indiana law is coming about at a very curious time. And he said, well, it's no different than the other states. He's just kind of poo-pooing it. But several corporations now have threatened to move out of Indiana over this whole matter.
Yeah, and you talk about money, you talk about power, you kind of wonder how will that threat influence the law that Indiana's getting ready to pass. It was Illinois, actually, isn't it?
No, it's Indiana.
Indiana?
Mike Pence is the governor of Indiana. I'm trying to think who the governor of Illinois. There's a new governor in Illinois who's a Republican also.
Yeah. So, anyway, those are some of the topics that we have.
Pence is considering running for president as well. He's considering going on the ticket.
And that would be the segue I'd like to use. When we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about running for the president and, again, power.
Yeah.
And how that influences running from the president. So here we are, the Morning Edge, and if you want to call when we come back, you can call us at 941-745-1490. In the meantime, we're going to hear briefly from one of our sponsors. I hope.
Mm-hmm. Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals, with the animals,
and we are back on the Morning Edge. So we were talking a little bit about presidential candidates just as we left. And there was an interesting article today that dealt with power, in a sense. This was wind power, and in the end, it deals with political power, and it deals with power of individuals. Chris Christie, back in 2010, pledged to harness the abundant energy off the coastline of New Jersey and put in these wind turbines to generate electricity. A 2000 Energy Department study estimated that about 4,000 gigawatts of wind energy could be potentially harnessed along the U.S. coastline, such a staggering amount that it's more than four times the current generating capacity of the United States' entire electrical grid, just by putting these wind turbines off the coast of the Atlantic Ocean. We could do that. And Chris Christie was all on board with this and promising in 2010 that near the Atlantic City area that we could put those turbines out there, and he was in favor of such a thing. And then, as his popularity began to grow, he thought that perhaps he might be able to run for president. But in order to do that, he would have to run as a Republican. And the Republicans don't like the idea of alternative energy. They're opposed to that.
Well, it goes against the oil industry. It goes against all of the things that pay their bills when they run for office.
And that was my initial analogy. It used to be the tobacco and the cotton. Whatever you could do to reap the profits from those two areas to become wealthier, become more powerful. And today there's a similar group of individuals that are interested in the power. And they're willing to do whatever it takes. And part of that power, the basis of that power, is oil. The oil that has caused these wars over the years, the initial Gulf War that we have.
And the upcoming war we're about to have.
That we may have, the overthrow of Iran, the involvement in places like Venezuela. The oil, which is really...
And we now may see the overthrow of Saudi Arabia in that same regard.
Because of the oil. And
yeah.
It's given power to these Arab, Islamist... terrorist, the oil revenues and stuff like that. But because of the oil industry, for instance, he's opposed to this now because of the Keystone Pipeline, which is over 1,000 miles away from New Jersey. But Chris Christie is opposed to what he once was in favor of, simply because if he wants to become powerful, the most powerful person possibly in the world, he would need the support of this Republican machine that is oiled literally in all ways by oil. And
they're pretty well locked in, that's for
sure.
It's
just another thing that happened there as well.
And I want, not to change your direction here at all, but when people see, and even Barack Obama came out and said there were the safest things in the world, these rigs offshore. 2 weeks later, that's when the thing blew up in New Orleans, and the people died on the rig and all of that. This is Barack Obama. Our leaders have married themselves into the oil industry way too much, liberal and conservative. And here's Christie, as Floyd is saying, talking about going away from the oil industry with air and wind. What does that mean, Floyd?
Yeah, and that's an interesting topic. Caller, I'm going to put you live. Welcome to the Morning Edge. Do you have a comment?
Good morning, caller.
Hi. Jay?
Your name is
Augie? This is the official WWPR Anointed Radio Terrorist, if you don't remember that.
Oh, I sure do.
Okay. And your first name is?
This is Peter.
Peter.
Welcome, Peter. Glad to have you back on the air.
What's up, Peter?
Peter, do you have some comments to deal with this?
Yeah, first of all, I think that you are making an overstatement or making a misstatement about Republicans and conservatives don't like alternative energy. That's not true.
No, show us the other examples then, Peter.
Well, the reason that, alternative energy is still in its infancy, okay? And until you can fly a plane across the country, run a train across the country, and drive a truck across the country without having to refuel it on alternative energy, it's not going to be a way of life.
That's partly true.
It just isn't going to happen.
That's partly true.
What is your bigger point then, Peter? You sound like you have.
Well, the thing is, you guys. First of all, you think the Republicans are controlled by the oil industry. I think the oil industry probably has influence on all parties, but let's look at what the oil industry is. The oil industry is our lifeblood. Without oil, you have no country, or you have no economic. You have a country, but you have no economic, system.
Yeah, I think you have a point as far as the trucking industry.
Except that you can take a country like Germany that is right now, I think their dependency on oil has dropped to about 30%. They've gone to wind, they've gone to solar. Even Germany, as far north as they are, have gone to solar. And so they've demonstrated a huge resistance, and they have a higher average wage level than we do in the United States. So how do you account for that?
Well, Germany's a much smaller country. We have 330 million people. I don't know what Germany's population is.
90 million.
90 million. Second of all, Germany does not have the mass transportation, personal transportation that we have in this country. Most people in Germany.
That's the problem, isn't it?
No, we don't want that, Augie. That, you guys don't get that.
What is it
that
we don't get?
People don't want to ride on mass transit.
Really? They do in Europe.
Well, that's because they're trained to be that way, and that's how
they're trained.
Well,
I like that.
They've been trained to do that. And look,
training?
And let's put it this way: gasoline in Germany is far more expensive than this country.
No,
okay?
But you know what? Let me stop you there. And you're not wrong about that. I've traveled over there. I know what you're talking about, and I've driven their cars. Their cars get double. They get almost 50 miles to the gallon, and our cars are lucky if they get 30. So you have
that's not true either, Augie. We have Priuses and all those new hybrid cars.
But the average mileage per car. They have Priuses over in Europe too. Wait a minute. The average mileage per fleet of the United States is about 22 miles to the gallon. The average in Europe is 45. So,
yeah, you know why that is?
Because their cars are not smaller. They're not smaller.
They don't have the luxuries that we have in that
which
country.
Which are?
Well, we have four-wheel drive vehicles that tow our boat to the boat landing.
Oh, that's
and
a
we have,
mileage.
We have RVs. Well, that'll take it. Those vehicles will take down.
They're not talking about the RVs. They're talking about the average sedan. I'm talking about the fleet sedan. I'm not talking about trucks or near trucks or things like that. No.
They do have a better gas mileage over there. Some of the cars, when they come up with these better engines, they end up in Europe before they end up in the United States for some reason.
And they're diesel.
Well, I think most vehicles, most. Right, and there's probably some vehicles that take away from our MPG average, I think if you look, there's a lot of vehicles in this country that are getting 30 miles plus a gallon.
I have one, actually. Pete, so I don't disagree with that. Yeah. It's just that the point you're making is lost when you compare the price per oil. You know what they get for the price of their gallon of gas? They get free.
I think it's like $8 US.
It's eight dollars. But they get for that money, they get free health care. Now, if you knew that you could double your price on your gas and then your mileage would go up and your health care would be free, Medicare for everyone, now what do you say?
I say that it would take into, if you raised our oil price, our gasoline prices, to $6 or $8 a gallon to provide health care, you would destroy the country's economy.
Did that happen to Europe, Pete?
Well, why didn't that happen
well,
there?
Well, those countries are much, once again, we're dealing with countries with far less population.
Well, 90 million is not that much less. I mean, maybe it's half our size or a third of our size.
Well,
that's still a lot of people.
That's just Germany alone.
You now have a collective country situation, which are like states. You don't have a 90 million state here in the United States. You have 36 in California.
Actually, we have 92 million people unemployed, so let me rephrase that.
Yeah, please do, because you're saying that every child and baby and person in diapers unemployed.
We have 92 workable, now unemployed. We have 92 million Americans that do not have a job, and I'm not talking about babies.
Peter, what's our population in the United States, Pete?
330 million, I think.
That's so you're right, saying a third of the people in America don't have... Okay, so 330, a lot of those people are kids, a lot of those people are retired.
So you're talking about Pete, just
think about the logic of what you just said. It's amazing what I hear. Pete, I do like your call, so I'm not... It's just kind of funny. So we'll say... How many people did you say we had?
We have 300 million.
You're saying a third of Americans are unemployed. So you're gonna take... almost 100 million that are either children or retired. You're saying almost a half of the people who can work are unemployed. Does that really make sense to you, Peter?
I think that would be
really. Well, we're also including people who, and I'm not talking about retirees. Underage workers and retirees are not considered.
Pete, you're talking about working age people, right? Aren't you?
Yeah, I'm talking about people 18 to 65. Okay,
right, that's working age, right? Yeah. So now you're telling us it's 92 million people.
Yeah. I mean, okay, well, Pete, that's an interesting statistic. Let's get back to where you were going when you first called in. I agree with your point that we do have a trucking industry and an auto industry dependent on oil. There's no question.
I think
we are making a change.
The point you're making is not wrong. Yeah. I don't think we're even disagreeing with you.
And going back to the solar. All right, we'll
stay on the topic. So we agree with the fact that cars do need oil, if nothing else, for lubrication.
Well, it's just not cars.
And trucks and trains.
Well, the other thing for oil producers is your plastics and all of that. So you have
that's right. That a lot of people don't even take that. It's a good point, Augie. Yeah. That a lot of people don't realize a lot of oils made for the byproducts of the plastics, the resins, you know, fiberglass, all that stuff. That all comes from that too. That's right.
But Peter,
so not every.
We agree with that. All we're trying to do is, if you think about it. It's not just clean energy. It's not just tree hugging. It's the idea of avoiding wars.
I think
the wars are financed by the oil industry. They have been caused by the oil industry.
I disagree that the Iraq war was over oil, too, by the way. Taking Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with oil.
No, he had nothing. I agree with you, Pete.
We didn't get oil from them in the first.
No, we didn't.
We're not getting oil from the Middle East.
So why did your point there? You said Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with oil. What did it have to do with?
It had to do with we went after Saddam because he was a tyrant of the Middle East.
Really?
Of Iraq, not the Middle East.
How big is Iraq?
Iraq is
the population
the size
of.
I don't know. Give me
a population number.
I don't know. What
Let's
it is.
Do it this way. What is the population of Iran?
10 million people. I don't know.
It's 90 million also. And in the case of Iran or Iraq, it's about maybe 30, and about 23 million of those people are Shia or moderate Muslim. They're the people of the soil and the working people, and they're not extreme Sunnis. Saddam was...
No, this
is an important point, and you can go from after this. I'm just going to make one more point. Saddam was a secular Sunni, and when people stood up, mullahs stood up and made problems in there, and he was called bloodthirsty because he'd go out and have them cut head, they'd literally cut their heads off for speaking out against the government. So we use that as an excuse. George Bush, gee whiz, I like to call him, pulled us in and ironically has handed over Iraq back to Iran. And that is why Saudi Arabia is attacking Yemen, because they want an excuse to start a religious war against Iran, who they most fear.
Well, and our president is allowing, or wants to allow Iran to have the way, you know, to do nuclear...
Pakistan has, right? Pakistan has, and they're also Muslim.
Is Pakistan threatening to wipe Israel off the map?
Yes, they have. Their Muslims have done it.
They have.
All the time, absolutely.
Yeah, they have.
And is Pakistan threatening to nuke the United States?
And some of their crazies have said just that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure there's crazies.
Who do you think support the Taliban? It's Pakistan, for crying
out
loud.
Yeah, they did. Yes, yeah. Absolutely right.
Benazir Bhutto.
Some of those factions.
Just so you understand, Pakistan is about 200 million people, and Benazir Bhutto was a very moderate Muslim who wanted to bring peace to Pakistan. The extremists, the Sunni extremists, are the ones tied to the Taliban, tied to ISIS, tied to Saudi Arabia, the ones who bombed the 9/11, the towers. Those are the same people.
Well, ISIS is a radical group.
They came out of Saudi Arabia.
Well, maybe so, but I'd say they don't have the values of Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabian government.
Wait a minute. Do you know what they do in Saudi Arabia? They lynch people every day. They stone people every day. The Sharia law is just that. The Mosaic law is thou shalt not, or we'll stone you. Same thing.
Yes, they do. I'm aware of that. They cut your hands off if you're a crook, and if. You know,
you're not a crook, if they decide that you spoke out against Muhammad in any way, you're dead.
Well, of course, and that's what the problem is with that religion and that mindset, that they'll take somebody's life because they criticize a religious figure.
Now, who else follows in the Middle East that is on our side? What is called strict fundamentalist. Mosaic law. It's called Israel. And Israel...
I was going to say, Israel's our only ally over there.
So we say. We like to say. When you have met Netanyahu, who's calling for a war, and he represents 3 to 5 million people, you have a situation of dragging... you have a small amount of people who are important, but saying, United States, you got the machinery, you go to war. We punch your button, you do what we tell you.
Israel's got their own military. I actually work with a guy that lived in Israel for about 8 or 10 years. You have to mandatorily serve in the military there, by the way, as a young man. Do you know that?
Unless you're real religious and consistent.
Yeah, the Orthodox don't get to.
And then he was a member of like the police that make sure that there's no, you know, like he says there's armed people walking everywhere, you know, with AK-47s on the streets to protect the citizens from terrorist attacks. And as you see, they have little or few of that in that country now, don't they?
Well, you know, they find enemies where they look for them, and where their paranoia takes them to. You know, Pete, you're a reasonable guy, but you've got to realize, and the land of vengeance is the Middle East, unfortunately,
yeah.
And Islam encourages vengeance. And
I understand that. You're absolutely correct. Let's look at all those other countries, and let's look at Israel. Israel is the only country. And I call them the Crapistan countries because they're all sand and they don't have anything except for the ones that are on the on the coast. Israel is the only country that is a prosperous democratic type country that has elections, that has an economy.
I will add one caveat.
They have a capitalistic style, economy there, okay? Mm-hmm. And the rest of those countries, they're riding around with swords and on camels, basically.
You might want to take another. When you did not know the population of Iran, you did not.
I didn't know it was that many people.
Must not know that Tehran is probably the most sophisticated country right next to Israel. They're not that different from one another, actually, and their people are very educated. They're not running around on camels.
Are they? They're bordering countries, aren't they?
No. They're not.
No.
They don't border onto Israel. But if they take over the southern part of Iraq, they soon will. And they're trying to corral the badass in Syria, Assad. And they have some control over him. That is why we have our CIA 2 years ago apologized to Iran for shutting down their government, which was a parliamentary system, much like Israel's, with a prime minister, Mossadegh, in 1953. And that brought on the isolation of the Ayatollah, who came back in 1979 and brought on the taking of our hostages as retaliation for what we did in 1953. 1953, and the auspices of the Eisenhower administration, who I love Dwight Eisenhower, but the Dulles brothers are the enemy as sure as hell of our country as anyone ever was, and to name an airport after them was a crime. But anyway, you look at what they did. They killed Allende, the Dulles brothers. They shut down the government of Iran. They created resentment for this country through the Mideast by that kind of behavior. And this is why we're now dealing the way we are, and why our CIA apologized 2 years ago formally for what we did in 1953.
Yeah, we had Iran, we had Lebanon, we had Jordan. Those were basically moderate nations at one time. They were thriving.
Lebanon is just as sophisticated and modern as you'll find.
And there's some of the most
anywhere
people.
Yeah,
and we have a big Lebanese population in this country.
Yeah,
too.
And yes, most of them, they work hard,
Maronite
industrious,
Catholic.
And
yeah.
It's just a shame that what's happened in that particular area. And it's a shame.
And
that
they went and Israel bombed them mercilessly about 3-4 years ago. Because the Hezbollah were a political part of their power base. Hezbollah, after the bombing, after the destruction of it, that Israel imposed on them with their heavy military to show they could do it, it was Hezbollah that put people back to work. It was Hezbollah that was a chief merciful support of their people. So you are what you do, ultimately. And they were bombed by Israel, and, of course, love for it, I'm sure.
Lebanon is kind of it's much smaller than Florida as far as it's probably about a half the size of Florida. They are in the northern boundary, and they were lobbing these Scud missile type of things at Israel. So there was, but again, Lebanon
what
and Jordan,
they received
in
retaliation.
Yes,
and they did that on behalf of the brutal treatment of Gaza and of the Palestinians. You know, Pete, if you want to see an interesting movie, you want to see, it's a movie about Poland in Warsaw and the Warsaw Ghetto. The pictures in the Warsaw Ghetto are exactly like, you could take the same pictures of the way the Palestinians are treated, the way the Jews were treated in Warsaw. There's no real difference. I sat through that film and I watched how they had gates and they held up their carts and they humiliated the people with their guards, treating people with impunity and meanness. And that's what is happening in Palestine right now, and in Gaza is particularly. And so you have a horrible situation. To me, it should be a great embarrassment to the Jewish people to see what's happening in Israel with respect to this minority.
Yeah, well, like the Middle East, one good thing I can say that we're not that reliant on the Middle East for oil anymore. If we were, I think we'd have a real problem in this country for the price of, you know, oil and gasoline. But we've thanked conservatives and George Bush that took some of the restrictions off our own oil production in this country. We're basically, Texas is producing about the same amount of oil that we were getting from the Middle East at one time.
Well, you're right about that. Yeah. You're totally right about that.
We're relying on our own.
Peter, that's not the issue that you called on. We have the option of having more renewable energy. We do need to have oil, but we don't have to have as much. We don't have to be as reliant on the Arab oil and the Middle East oil that has made this world such a volatile place to live. And what would be wrong with having more? Again,
if it's true that
the Department of Energy said, right, when George Bush was president, that offshore we could have over 4,000 gigawatts of wind energy, which is more than the United States' current grid.
You're talking about the wind energy?
Right.
Just the wind.
Mm-hmm.
If you know,
they wanted to do that in Massachusetts off the coast of Martha's Vineyard. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
I absolutely remember.
And guess who fought against
Walter
that?
Walter Cronkite. I actually emailed him, and he responded.
No, Ted and Ted Kennedy. Yeah. Those two guys fought that. I just want to say, I know you guys are going to go, but...
that's okay.
No, Walter was saying,
You're totally right about
it.
You're on point again and again.
He said, I said, well, how could you oppose this? He says, well... It's not my backyard.
They didn't want to look at the turbines.
Yeah.
And the turbines probably would have been far enough offshore that you would have saw them, but they wouldn't have been in your backyard.
It was Ted Kennedy who also blocked a Medicare bill for all, and guess who put that forward? It was a Republican. It was Richard Nixon.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
I don't remember that. But
oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So you're the Republicans of today are not the Republicans of the past. That's the other problem. And that right now you're going to see an interesting fight in the Republican Party between Jeb Bush and James Baker. There's one going on.
I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think Bush is going to be nominated. I don't even think he's going to be in the top running, to be honest with you.
Well, that is you're not the only conservative who's saying
that. Whoever thought, wait a minute, let's think about this. Whoever thought a guy from Chicago that hardly served in the government would be president of the United States, okay? So
You got a point.
There are things that do happen that are not predicted. But Floyd, did you see about 2 weeks ago the UK had a solar eclipse? Do you remember that story?
Yep.
I posted that on Facebook. Did you see, I get, the London Times and all that stuff over the internet. They were having everybody go into meltdown because they thought they weren't going to have any electricity because some of those countries were relying on solar, and that eclipse was happening in the mornings during commuting times.
Yeah.
It happened, I think, at 8:34 local time, and they were afraid they were going to lose their power grid over that. I don't know what the end result was, but when the sun got blocked out, it was being blocked out at the time of day where everybody has a big demand on power. And it wasn't just one country.
It's a problem.
In the morning, you have, there's two times a day where you have huge energy consumptions. You have in the morning when people are getting up and going to work and transportation, and then at night when they come home, and everybody turns heat up in the north and cooks. I mean, that's the two times a day. That's why FPL has those meter things on some of the commercial applications that actually shuts or reduces power to commercial buildings during that time. So the strain on the grid is able to compensate for the demand use at that time of day.
Well, Pete, the power demands and the systems are set up for different things, but the bigger problem is the electromagnetic surge. One weapon of a certain kind that starts to affect one of the seven big generators that are in our various areas nationwide can shut us down big time.
Well, so another thing that people don't even talk about, and it's not a big deal, and it's a big threat. The biggest threat to the power grid is a solar flare. If a solar flare directly hits us at the right angle, we've been lucky. We've had a couple of huge flares, but they've basically skimmed the northern or southern part of the Earth. They haven't been hit with energy discharge was on the equator.
Right.
Or over a certain area. And there are countries that have had power failures, but they've been small and remote countries. I don't know if you saw the Northern Lights display, but about 2 weeks ago...
I have seen in the past,
there was
but not
a
recently.
Huge Northern Lights display because there was a huge solar flare.
Mm-hmm.
They said if a solar flare ever takes out the grid, it'll be months before you have electricity, not days or hours.
Oh, that and or a major volcano going off in the right situation, same way, same effect.
Oh, right, because the power companies don't have enough transformers and switches to be replaced to put the country back on. And you know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to cascade, but... power failures cascade. We had that one up in the northern part of the country about 10 years ago.
Well, it's a little longer, but you're right. We had one, and I discussed that on my television show, The Edge, years ago. And that we had some people who were involved and knew that was... That thing had rolled around and blacked out in New York, and they stopped it just in time. It went into North... It was in North America, including Canada, and we got lucky.
Do you remember the great power failure back in the 60s? where the whole East Coast went black?
Well, that's the one where I was really referring to.
Oh, okay. I was a kid. I remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember that power. Yeah. Yeah, the power went out from, like, New York all the way down to, I guess, D.C. or something.
Right. And they got the roll stopped. To give you a bit of an idea about the size of those generators, it's the size of a double size of a rail car.
Well, Peter, we want to thank you for your call.
Okay.
And it's kind of nice. We have a nice conversation, give and take with that. And that's what makes me want to come on and be on the radio. I want to thank you very much as we're winding
up. You're very welcome.
Our conversation.
Thanks.
Hope to hear from you
anytime.
Again.
So, I my work is scheduled where I can't call you guys.
Well, when
often,
you do, we appreciate
whenever
it.
You can, we appreciate
and I happen
it.
I happen to have this Monday off, so
thank
I figured
you. Thank you very much, Peter.
I did listen to you on Friday, but I couldn't call.
Okay.
I listen sometimes and not call.
Have a wonderful week, then. Bye-bye.
Yep, take care, bye.
Well, there you go.
Okay,
we want to thank Pat, an old caller, and we've got to thank Pat as well.
Pat and Peter for calling us on the Morning Edge. Mm-hmm. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation. We're starting to wind down now, and we will be back here for another show of the Morning Edge
on Wednesday. And we have Mary Cantrell from the school board. We're going to have a little conversation about the condition of the school board and the financial situations, which we talked about on Friday with Dennis Maley from the Braden and Times. So stay tuned.